This is a KUNV Studios original program.
You're listening to special programming sponsored by Making Moves Life Coaching Services. The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Good morning, Las Vegas. This is Veterans Affairs Plus on 91.5 Jazz and More. I'm Dave Washington, your host, back in the seat for a little bit. And I want to thank retired Fire Chief Eugene Campbell, a colleague and friend who set in for me the last couple of shows. And he did a great job. In fact, I listened to it. In fact, Wes was talking about how well he thought Gene did as well. So, Chief Campbell, thank you, brother, for holding down for me. I'd like to also congratulate UNLV President Wickfield. I have not been on the show to just say, hey, good job, great job. And we're so happy that you have gotten a new four-year contract. We ask and pray for your continued success. My grandson, Kyron Armagon, his birthday is this month. So happy birthday, grandson. We know that in he's an aspiring basketball player, doing a good job. He's 5'9", and I'm 5'8", so he's soon to be 12, and he's going right past his grandpa. Condolences. Zena Dunn lost her mom, so we want to express condolences to that family. And Zena is one of our radio personalities on one of the, I guess you would call it corporate radio stations, but we surely want to express again condolences on the loss of her mom. And her services, in fact, are today. So Gene did a great job for folks over at EOB during her lifespan and work on this planet. As I continue to, you know, get these medical issues addressed, I certainly want to thank all those who have prayed and for my healing. I've gotten all sorts of texts, calls, emails, greatly appreciated by me and my family. So once again, thank you all and keep the prayers going because I ain't out of the woods yet, but I'm keeping it on a positive note. With that, I'm going to move quickly into, once again, this is Veterans Affairs Plus on 91.5 Jazz and More, and I'm excited. And I say this a lot. People probably say, yeah, you say you're excited a lot. Well, I am. I'm very excited because today I have Fire Chief Sherman George, retired, Captain Addington Stewart, retired. These, and also Stu is the former president of the IABPFF. These gentlemen are longtime colleagues at the Carl Holmes Executive Development Institute and just some good friends to have a lifelong relationship with. So good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
How you guys doing?
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, good morning. We got Chief George and we got Captain Addington Stewart. How you guys doing today?
All right. Can't get no better.
I heard that.
Yeah. Hey, walking, talking, and breathing. You can't get no better than that.
For sure. Look, Sherm, I know you are a military veteran. Would you please tell our listening audience what branch and how long did you serve?
Well, I served in the United States Army from 1965 June of 1965 to June of 1967. Mm-hmm. And I did my basic training about 130 miles from St. Louis at Fort Leonardwood, Missouri. Mm. And after that, I went to Fort Gordon, Georgia, to the military police school there. And it's an MOS of 95B, 95 Bravo. And
isn't that something? Sherm, do you know, Chief, that I didn't know that you were a military police? Gene was a military police as well. So you were
right.
Yeah, I didn't know you guys do have that in common. But Gene was Air Force.
Well, that's a sign of leadership. You try to do what's right and keep everybody else in line.
That's right. Okay, so Stu, I know that you did not go to the military, but I consider you one of our domestic warriors in terms of being a firefighter. How long did you serve and when did you enter the fire service there in St. Louis?
I entered the fire service in St. Louis in 1978, just after graduating from high school. Mm-hmm. In 1977. I stayed there for 35 years, retired 2013. Of course, as you mentioned, I was a captain, and I worked in the administration of Chief George and managed his bond issue for him, $44 million bond issue. And we didn't mess nothing up. Matter of fact, it was one of the well and best managed bond issues that they had had. With the, and I can't, I won't be remiss without mentioning Miss Cynthia Dixon, who managed the money side for the department and for the fire chief, and worked with me directly. But we kept everything in order because we knew they was looking for us to mess up.
Well, yeah, you know,
so they were.
Go ahead, Chief.
That's about service. I mean, he, Captain Stewart really kept me out of, kept me on the straight and narrow. You know, I would say that I had a vision for the fire department, but I needed good people who could make that vision come true. Mm-hmm. And he was right on top of it. He was number one. I didn't mess up. We got everything. Didn't have all those change orders and everything. We got anything, everything in order. Mm-hmm. And we didn't waste the city's money. And that's what I was interested in, and make sure that we manage the money properly.
Right.
Because that's, you know, if you don't do that, you that's a sure sign of failure. You know that one.
Absolutely. You know, it's very interesting that you guys had that bond issue. We had a tax initiative here in Las Vegas, and one of the things that I was responsible for was going out into the community. And you have to convince people that it's a good investment of their money. And like you said, Chief, one of the key things is properly dispensing that money, not just, you know, foolishly throwing it here, there, and everywhere, but have a particular target of items that you want to get accomplished. So absolutely great. So, Chief, how many years you do with the department, Chief?
Well, I'm a couple months short of 40 years.
Mm.
40 years. Okay. It was a little longer than I wanted to stay, but I just had to try to stay to ensure that things were not put in a way that we failed to accomplish our mission.
Right. Well, one thing I want to roll into now, you know, you guys have had long, great careers with St. Louis Fire Department, and you guys have been instrumental in the Carl Holmes Executive Development Institute over a number of years. And you guys have done great work there, along with our recently deceased colleague and friend, Chief Spike Jones. What a great brother he was. So tell me a little bit about your experience with the Carl Holmes Executive Development Institute, and then we'll talk a little bit more specifically about Spike and his contribution to you guys' effort.
Well, my experience, you know, Stu's always been there, mostly in the background, but he had to come forward after a couple of years. But we were actually busy about trying to help people pass these promotional exams and so they'd have opportunity to move up. I think most people misunderstand something. Here's the deal. They think that taking these tests is the ultimate answer. But it all depends on what type of test you're taking. We're talking about performance-based testing. And that presented a problem for African Americans around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always believed that we could do the job, but we had to have a way that we can demonstrate that we could do the job. I mean, that didn't come about early enough.
Right.
So many, you know, people were educated and had the knowledge, but never had the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You see, my life philosophy is no opportunity, no success. You know, you can't get anywhere if you don't have the opportunity. And we, for so long, African Americans were denied those opportunities.
Sure.
And what Dr. Holmes presented us was it was a an opportunity. And it all was based around knowing your job.
Mm-hmm.
And we all had to focus on that. And so Spike and I began in the second year EDI, 1992.
Right.
We had a relationship in those heydays where you had to, you know, you were paying your own transportation and you're taking your own time off, and making sure you brought your own materials and made up your own outline, which had to get it approved by Dr. Holmes first.
Mm-hmm.
But we made sure that we got those things accomplished to try to make sure that people knew what their jobs were and how they had to perform them.
Right.
And, you know, you mentioned Chief Jones, and, you know, he and I have been road dog for many years going across this country,
mm-hmm.
Trying to train, not to teach, but to train. There's a difference in my mind. You know, I think most African Americans know how to do the job, but sometimes you get waylaid about, we do it this way, they do it that way. And that way you always get confused and you don't get the right answers. So, but anyway, I don't want to take ball time. It's 14 after. So I want to make sure that Stu gets put his 2 cents in work.
Oh, no, we're going to get Stu. But one thing I ask of you is, you know, there was another gentleman, I think Stu told me there was another gentleman who started out with you and Spike, and then he transitioned in a little bit later.
Yeah, it was a Battalion Chief Robert Grady. He and I started early in the career where we were put on a panel to grade tests, and it was 2 African-American captains and 2 white captains. We all had great relationships,
mm-hmm.
and we were set in the same room, and we developed not only the answer key, but checked every paper to make sure that we did it right,
mm-hmm.
according to our procedures and rules and regulations, et cetera, et cetera. And we graded those individuals. And I had one concern, you know, because at the end of the test, the director of personnel said he gave us a test, said this guy says he answered the questions right, and I want you guys to regrade it.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, you know, I thought about it and keep grading. I thought about it and said, you know, what if we make a mistake and say it would, we come out different. He come out different.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't know who it was or anything, but we regraded the test and it came out exactly the same. So that was a great lesson to say that, hey, if we do this thing right, everybody will have the same opportunity.
Absolutely.
And that's all we were looking for. We didn't necessarily give us anything, but make sure that we had the opportunity. And we could see that in the assessment center process,
right,
where if you knew your job and you done it fairly, that you had a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You had a chance.
Right.
But that multiple choice test, I don't think we had a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was, we were just testing for knowledge.
Right.
You know, in order to have a decent test, you have to test for knowledge, skills, and ability. You know, it's just like getting in that car and driving and get your driver's license. You know, you got to do that ABC test, but then you got to get in the car and do that tough parallel parking.
Right.
And so that's a demonstration of skills that you have, not what you tell me you have, but what you show me that you have.
Absolutely.
So that's it. So, but anyway, I hope I answered that question.
No, that's fine. And Stu, as far as when you rolled into the operation with these guys in terms of being instructors there, give some thoughts about your involvement in that process.
Well, yeah. First, I was a student at EDI. I attended my first year in 1995,
mm-hmm.
graduated in 99, and was an instructor in 2000, because Sherman had became the fire chief in St. Louis, fire commissioner in chief,
mm-hmm.
in St. Louis. And first, though, even before that, I was a student of theirs. Dr. Holmes, as you know, created this whole assessment center process,
right,
for us to even teach.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely we got to give kudos to Dr. Carl Holmes, because he was a test consultant with a consultant that had came to St. Louis and had been a part of that process.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the 86 exam or somewhere in there, maybe even before that, the 80 exam.
Okay.
But getting back to the point of EDI, of course, found out after the first year that I knew I was going to go all 5 years back to back to back. And because of the instruction and all of the information we received. And so I did do those 5 years. Like I said, I became the instructor when Chief George was made chief. I had always been assistant and had been around them with recruitment, and the likes, and helping people with getting testing done within the St. Louis Fire Department mm-hmm. in reference to entry-level tests. But it was the first time venturing off in the assessment center process. They schooled me well, I believe. But between me and Spike in the last, I would say, last 5 to 10 years, it had been him and I exclusively going around the country. And I mean, not only was I helping and supporting and teaching, just like Sherm said, you know, you got the driver's license, just think of an airplane. You get on an airplane and the pilot tells you he passed the multiple choice test, but then when he got in the simulator, he crashed every time. Now, you wouldn't want to be on that plane.
That's so, right.
You know, that's the difference in assessing someone's abilities and versus people's job knowledge. Because mm-hmm. we ran into that in the fire service, and you know as well, we had some guys that were smart as a whip, but you get them out there to perform, even actually perform, they couldn't do the job.
Right.
You know?
Yes. Very true. In fact,
so that was actually the challenge.
Yes. And to that point, I had an individual, he graduated, I'll never call his name openly, but he graduated from EDI, and he was pressing me because he was doing very well on the battalion chief test. But when it came down to performance, you know, we used to monitor the radios on certain level of fire within our city. And I watched how this guy would always, what they call, as you guys are familiar with, pass command. Never would take command. Also, when I took over as fire chief, me and the PIO ran PIO training. Anyone who could possibly be having to address the press, we taught them how to do that. Because I was a PIO early in my career, public education / public information officer. So this guy wouldn't even deal with the press, man. And I'm like, I can't take you to the next level. Oh, you're never going to promote. I never said that I won't ever, but you got to show something, man. And one thing that I was always standing firm on, you can't come to me just because you're black and expect me to promote you and you bring nothing to the table. That's not the way things should go in any organization for that matter, let alone a very dangerous occupation that we shared in the fire service. So please, I want to roll now into your thoughts about our colleague Spike Jones and his contribution overall, not only to EDI and to the St. Louis Fire Department, but as you guys both have kind of touched upon the things that he did throughout the country. And as I expressed at his repast, I told his wife that, yeah, there was a lot done as far as EDI is concerned, but the touch, the reach was outside of the United States of America because we had people come in from England. We had people come in from the Caribbean, of course. So Spike touched people as you guys have from around this world. So comments in regards to that, please. Chief
well,
George.
Right quick, sometimes we talk about what people have done. And, you know, I would say this. Chief Jones was my acting deputy chief for at least six years, or mm-hmm. might have been more.
Right.
6 years, 8 years that I was chief.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, he wasn't compensated for it. It's just a sacrifice he made.
Right.
He made a sacrifice, and for the most part, because there were some others who said they didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, being a chief, I could order them to do it, but you don't want to order people to do things that they don't want to do.
Right.
You know, unless it's an emergency thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that doesn't help you at all. So, that shows part of his leadership.
Right.
And some people have a different frame of what they think about leadership.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at it as sacrifice and responsibility. Sacrifice and responsibility. And leadership ain't no reward. I mean, most people think, well, I get to be king tomorrow. I just sit on the throne.
Right.
That's
a fact. Yeah. Once again, Las Vegas, this is Veterans Affairs Plus on 91.5 Jazz and More. I have retired Fire Chief Sherman George, St. Louis Fire, and also retired Captain Addington Stewart of the St. Louis Fire Department. And I appreciate these guys. Go ahead, Chief.
But right quick, before I let Stu in, I would say the sacrifice what happened when me and Spike were going across the country, when Spike and Stu were going across the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't make any money off of that.
Right.
So we were doing this because people wanted thought we could help them.
Right.
You know, and we did that so well, I believe. I know we did.
Right.
But it took those were our days off.
Right.
We didn't get paid for those days.
Absolutely.
They did pay for our hotel room and our air flight. I'll say that.
Right.
But, I mean, we weren't paid any salary or nothing like that.
Sure.
And so that's part of the sacrifice I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
That's where you look at as a leader. Stu, go ahead and say something.
Yeah. And I really ain't no short version of this, but we got to give the short version. And like I say, I've been running with Spike ever since 2000, up until his passing. We were at EDI in 2023. But it's really, I called him, and people in the fire service know what this is. Mm-hmm. He was the lead instructor of our class during
sure.
the entire time I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I learned a whole lot from him. He was real particular, analytic. He was arrogant to a not a fault.
That's
but
right.
arrogant. He was so arrogant and positively arrogant about his knowledge of the assessment center process and everything we learned in from, you know, why they doing these things, why the consultants asking questions the way they do, to mm-hmm. what you should even look like, how you should wake up in the morning and start your assessment center process day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difference between teaching somebody the job and preparing somebody from the test. I learned that sitting with him and the chief. And that's what we would tell people. Okay, you know all of this stuff, but are you prepared to take this test?
Right.
You know, or are you prepared to take the test, but then don't know the stuff that you're supposed to know in relationship to your rules, regs,
mm-hmm.
policies and procedures and operating guidelines. And that was all of the things he was good at. And to this day, up until his passing, I should say, Spike was still going to assessments. He was in Illinois in January of this year,
mm-hmm.
you know, on an assessment center process.
Right.
He and I was in Baltimore recently. We were in Bridgeport recently, where people were successful in the exam. And we kind of changed things up and offered people the opportunity to make a donation to us
mm-hmm.
if they wanted to.
Right.
Some people did and some didn't.
Right.
Depending on how small or large their organizations were.
Mm-hmm.
But like the chief said, they took care of our room and board. Some made donations at the end.
Right.
And we never set out and told them, y'all, we charging you this to come to your city. Y'all need us. Y'all call us. We get the appropriate information and contacts with them. But Spike was real, real, real down to the bone on this. And he told me he was going to ride this thing out till the wheels came off. And he definitely did.
Absolutely.
You know, and just one quick perspective from him.
Sure.
When it was about eight of us, our firefighters and friends went to meet with him. Well, I met with him like that Friday before that next Monday when a bunch of us went back.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing Spike told us, because he was basically saying goodbye to us.
Right.
We didn't know it at the time.
Sure.
But he was. And the one thing he told us was, money ain't everything. And he said, all this money I got, if I can't buy my health.
Right.
That was one thing he said to us.
Very
and then the other thing he said to us, hey, y'all, I ain't going to make it through this one. He said it three different times for the hour and about 15 minutes we were there. That he ain't gonna make it. And we tried to reassure him, oh, yeah, brother, all you gotta do is do this, eat this, do this, and do that, and you'll be okay. But truthfully, we could see the life leaving him, and we could see that he was in the battle of his life and he was losing.
Mm-hmm.
And but this brother, man, I'm telling you, we went to war. He supported everything I did. I was the chapter president in St. Louis, mm-hmm. a fire. He supported me. He was right there with me, giving me advice. Regional director,
mm-hmm.
same thing. International president, same thing. And I mean, me and him been traveling, like I say, for the last 24 years and doing EDI.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a blessing. We were starting a succession plan, and we're going to implement it this coming school year. Got some new ideas, got some fresh young folks we're trying to pull in.
Mm-hmm.
But Spike can't be replaced.
Absolutely.
I'm going to leave it at that. He cannot be replaced.
100%.
Look, never be replaced.
Once again, this is Veterans Affairs Plus on 91.5 Jazz and More. I have retired Chief of St. Louis Fire Department Sherman George and retired Captain Addington Stewart. We call him Stu of the St. Louis Fire Department as well. Appreciate you guys. As we get prepared in our closing minutes, again, what can we do? And I'm asking a question of you guys to ensure that his legacy continues on. And I know he wrote a book, which I bought several copies and will continue to buy copies. And once we learn where we can get those copies, we need to make sure that we get that information out to particularly those who are in the fire service as well as other occupations and organizations. It just shows, again, and you guys have touched on several times, his leadership ability. So with that, what can we continue to do? Because Spike was such a great leader.
I think you mentioned something great about writing the book, and he couldn't put everything in the book, but it shows a history, and I think that's what we need to go back to, because sometimes we're losing some of these young people, but they don't quite understand. They have to go through what we've been through,
mm-hmm.
and we try to tell them, but unless you experience it, it's two different things, but there are young people who truly understand the struggle, and we need to look at people and their history, what they've done. It's like I look at Chief Calhoun, the first time I ever seen a black chief.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that? Never seen a black chief.
Right.
But when I get out of EDI, I'm amazed because, you know, I was not a fire chief. I was a battalion chief.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed at all the chief officers we saw. There was an image, something that I wanted to be. Something.
Well, let me say this, Chief. You know, I didn't have a clue about a vitae. I knew about a resume, but I took your vitae. It was you, sister out of Berkeley. Yours, I think it was something I got from Bob. But what I did was I take a collection of things that I learned from each one of you guys and packaged my own stuff, man. So us connecting with one another is so important, man. And like I say, I learned a lot from all of you guys. And one of the key things about EDI, as you've mentioned, you both admit you get to interact with officers from various ranks, from various departments, and there's no cookie cutter approach. Some people think that you can just use this cookie cutter and become fire chief. No, it's all different. Every department has something a little bit different from another. Go ahead, Chief.
And there's always somebody as your boss.
That's right.
You know, you have expectations when you become chief, but there are people who help you along the way, have expectations too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hopefully they have the same expectation you have, but when they don't, it creates a clash. And then what do? But you got to go within and pull at your own heartstrings and say, what do I do?
Right.
And then make the right decision based on what it means, not just to you, but what it means to black firefighters and black citizens and all citizens of any municipality you work for.
Right.
Because if you do a thing fairly, it's going to affect everybody.
That's right. That's right. Stu, what you got for us as we close?
Well, I would say capture as many of those stories as we can, because that's what he was doing in his book. And that would add to his legacy, I would say.
Sure.
I was watching through, and I know a few people who had posted on his on the mortuary site,
mm-hmm.
Leaving their thoughts of spite. Chief Willie Owens out of Jackson, Mississippi, he mentioned Spike, and he said they would have never made the strides and the promotions and gotten the promotions they had gotten if it wasn't for him and Sherman. If you talk about Chief Ronnie Few,
mm-hmm.
down out of, it wasn't at Fulton County at the time, was it Birmingham?
Right.
Chief Ronnie Few.
Yeah, he was down in Georgia, but not, it wasn't Birmingham. I forget where it was. But anyway, we're getting ready to wrap up.
I know he was in Fulton County, but in that, just him too. You know, those types of stories, if we could figure out a way to put out a message to capture them,
mm-hmm.
and let people tell them going back as far as people can remember and put them in some type of document, I think that would leave a legacy for Spike that family would appreciate.
Great. Well appreciated, gentlemen. Thank you guys for your comments about your service within the fire service and your contact, your camaraderie with our brother, Chief Spike Jones. Thank you, guys. And this is Veterans Affairs Plus on 91.5 Jazz and More. We'll talk
next week. Thank you for having us.
For sure.